This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at weightwatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
Everybody, hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
Ben, I have a question for you.
Oh my, I love questions. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. What is one thing you really like about yourself? I knew that would stump him.
Why would you ask a question like that? Okay. That's a fair question. What is one thing I like about myself? I think that I'm I would say a person of action.
A person of action.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I think that there's, you know, it's been kind of interesting. Like I've been re-examining the concept of the Zeigarnik effect, here quite a bit lately, because I think more and more I've come to understand the concept. And I think as I come to understand it better, the more I've been able to sort of harness the meaning and the way that I can inject it into my life. So
okay.
If in case anybody is not a diehard, you know, self thinker or reflector or whatever, the Zeigarnik effect is basically this psychological phenomenon where it's you have discomfort associated with incomplete tasks. So if you've got the way I have started to really think about it is either an email you're intentionally leaving unread until you have the time to go back and address whatever is inside of it, or alternatively tabs open on your web browser that you just sort of leave open all the time, and it's sort of oh yeah, this was a thing I needed to complete, but I haven't had the ability to go do it, or this is something I wanted to read about and I haven't done it, or whatever the case may be. So I think that when I am struggling the most, when I'm feeling the most overwhelmed, is when lots and lots of tabs are open,
right?
All at the same time. And sometimes those are really long-term things, that I don't have the ability to create action around. It's mostly just sort of
you're just sort of in a waiting, in a holding pattern until such an opportunity arises as you can address it.
Well, or alternatively, it's something that I'm emotionally invested in, but action is not something I have the ability to, put out there, if that makes sense. So sometimes it's almost waiting on the behavior of another person to simply happen, and it's kind of you can see the writing on the wall that something is going in a particular direction, and it's not really your place to be involved in the situation, but being emotionally invested means you can't close it because you need it to achieve some amount of what your brain will calculate as complete.
Right.
And I'm speaking in extreme vagueisms here, but I think that that's something that can be hard for me if more and more and more of them start to stack. I think that for daily routine type things, I don't open a tab, for example, in the morning for wake up, make the bed. There's just certain routines that I'm able to just sort of let cruise control take care of.
Right. You do that though. You make the bed every morning.
I do. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Good for you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. That was actually something I would definitely credit to Alice, who I feel would start every morning by pulling all the, the bed sheets and everything just back up. And so it's not like a perfect crisp, you know, like bounce a penny off the surface of it or anything.
Right. But it's also not just like a tumbleweed mess from how you slept last night.
Correct. And largely that's like one of those things where I basically decided at some point in time that it's like much more comfortable at the end of the day to go and like pull the blankets back or whatever.
It absolutely is. Beth is very good at like making the, I feel like that's like her like reset thing. It's like, I can't really start working on anything else until the bed is made, even if that thing is like downstairs in the basement.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. You know? No, it's you're definitely right. Like the chaotic pattern of like hierarchy to tasks. Like you could say start at the top and work your way to the bottom. But sometimes it's sort of like, yeah, but this middle task I want done because if I don't have time for everything else, then at least that part will be done.
That one, it's like that's the one that's like pulling the cord on the lawnmower.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. You
know, it gets the engine started.
Yeah. And then everything else can subsequently follow. But yeah, so the like that's the thing, is that like routine tasks, no problem. But then like, oh, you know, right now we're currently staying at my mother-in-law's house while like some drywall and stuff like that gets on, some messier portions of our home renovation project. And so, but then over the weekend, we were going to come back to our house for the evening so that Addison could wake up in our home and, you know, the Easter Bunny could visit and all that type of stuff. So, but then upon leaving, you know, the mountain house, as we call it, which is where Alice's mom lives, there was like a series of tasks because I had Addison with me. Alice and my mother-in-law were getting ready to leave for work. And so they were like, hey, before you leave, can you just like, you know, make sure that the bedroom doors are closed and that the doors are locked and that Chewy is in his crate and Sirius is in his crate. And, you know, this thing needs to be put in this place and this thing needs to be done here. And it was almost like in the process of like hearing these things, it was almost like I was like, you know, like open a tab, close the door, open a tab, lock the doors, open a tab, you know. And it was because they're not like routine actions for me. And so like in this moment, it was like literally none of these things are hard. They take like physical, like, you know,
seconds to do. Yeah,
precisely. Yes. But like in my mind, I was like, I don't have a routine for this. And therefore it can be mildly overwhelming inside of the moment.
Right.
You know, to make sure like, what if I forgot one? And then it's almost like now the tabs are like in like, I don't know, incognito mode or something where it's like, I know there were seven. Do I remember what they all were?
Right. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. That's where a good checklist is helpful. You know, like make sure we got it all. But in the meantime, though, on the flip side of things, I think that like when it comes to tasks that I have direct actionability over, I think I'm very quick to performing the action. As long as I have the ability to interact with the problem, I will.
Right.
And there are certain barriers that historically I was not as open to, like basically classifying as actionable. So I've talked a little bit recently about like having difficult or hard conversations. That is something where I have tried to be much, much, much better about just being like, do not let discomfort exist between you and a person you care about. Like speak, have the conversation,
right?
You know, and it's like those hard conversations, what I've started to realize is that more often than not, they're not that hard,
right?
Like I think a lot of people like to clear the air, even if they all know it's uncomfortable to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, what I used to do if there was like, you know, conflict, is I would just be like, well, I don't want to cause more conflict, so I'm just going to ignore it, or, you know, try to separate myself from it. And it's like that is like a blinking tab, like with like a
right,
you know, like a red notification, like, you know, flashing light.
Yeah.
You know, and like those are the kinds of things. Then sometimes the further you get from it, the less comfortable it is to go back to it. And like, do you remember 3 months ago when we had that conversation about this thing? Like, ugh, I did not like that. You know, and it's like,
right,
you talk about 3 months, like, because half the time too, something that matters to you doesn't matter to the other person.
Right.
And then you
and like, that's sort of the problem.
That is sort of the problem. Exactly. Yeah. You know, because then you're dwelling on it and they don't care at all. And if you, the further you get from it, the more unusual it feels that you're bringing it up now.
Right.
Time. Like, why?
I know. Or it's like, why are you, this feels like it's the worst when there are like a series of small things that have like built up and like suddenly you're like really upset about like what feels like a small thing in the moment. And it's difficult to articulate how the, like, what the bigger problem is over time.
Definitely.
Right. And it's just like, what, why is this such a big deal? And it's like, it's because it's like the 50th time it's happened.
Yes.
Right.
It's like the straw that broke the camel's back paradox, where right. it's like, so often it ends up being the case that like you end up snapping because you've just like, you've literally crossed that eventual threshold, which is like, I'm now upset because I don't know, you complained about pickles on your hamburger or something like that. And it's like, why are you upset about that? And it's like, because of all the other things.
Right.
You know, yeah. And it's like, but why now?
They suddenly feel disjointed, but your brain has aligned them on like the same line of this issue, which you may not even realize is bothering you in the moment.
And half the time, I think that is the problem, is that like you can live, I think many of us do this, like we live with discomfort without realizing how uncomfortable it's making you. And then if you clear it, it's almost like, you know, like sometimes if you've got like the vent fan on your microwave on from where you were like boiling water or something, it's like that fan makes this like noise that you acclimate to. But then the moment somebody turns it off, you're like, oh.
Yeah. Like, oh my gosh.
The noise is gone.
It's so quiet.
And that can be. That like I think all of those things help so tremendously. And so for me, when I'm at my best, though, it's like when I've successfully gone through and closed every major tab, and it's sort of like, okay, now I'm not like worried about big things,
right?
And sometimes I feel like that only really happens if I'm like on like specific kinds of like vacations, because it's like you've removed yourself entirely from. Like, I can't go out and pull weeds at my house right now, you know, because I'm 400 miles away. And therefore, it's like, I'm not putting the expectation on myself to that, like...
Oh, right. Like, right. I could like when you're on vacation.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Like, I think this is where sometimes people think, like, you know, you go on vacation to the beach and you love being at the beach. And then it's like, well, maybe we should buy a beach house so we can be at the beach like a whole bunch. But it's like part of, I think, what makes the vacation is that you like it doesn't matter if the bolts on the deck walking down to the sand are rusty because they're not your bolts.
Right.
You know, like,
yeah.
And it's like, I trust that they will continue to perfectly hold this thing up. But if you own that property, you might be like, we're going to need to replace those bolts before next year. Like things are going to maybe start to be a problem.
Right. Right.
Know?
Yeah.
And that's another tab that just opened, you know,
yeah.
And it's like, and so then, I don't know. Yeah. All those little ones can add up, but I do think, you know, like I try really hard. Like if there's something that like I can think of and I can immediately go and like perform the action, then it's great.
Awesome.
Yeah. Why did you ask, or should I also ask you, what is one thing that you like about yourself?
Oh, I just figured it would be a funny question because I thought that it would give you a moment of pause, which it did. I suppose you could ask me if you want.
I will. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. 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 I really like that. I think I'm like a really like playful person.
Yeah.
In general, like I think I'm a real like child at heart kind of person, and I do really like that about myself, that I like it, let myself be like really like, I don't know, silly or childlike at times, which I think it helps me like, you know, bond with my kids and like not take like every aspect of life like so seriously, which I think, you know, at times, especially it feels like lately, especially where there's just like so many things happening in the world and it's just like, they feel like they need a lot of serious attention, but like either like you were saying, like there's not a whole lot you can personally do about it, or you just can't like put that on your plate too, or just like reminding yourself that like in the present right here, what's in front of you, your family, your food, your whatever it is like, you know, that is your present, and it's like that's like still good and happy, and you can interact with that in a less serious way.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from entirely, and I do think that you're really good about this. Like, I don't think that you like fixate on like preoccupation nearly the same way, and I think a lot of times that's where it's like I think that's where you can like lean into games and like, you know, the like enjoyment of just like a simple like backyard barbecue or something right. like that, you know, like it's like you're much more just like, oh my God, it was so great. Like, you know, we went to mom and dad's, we cooked burgers and, you know, ate on the picnic table in the backyard and everything was hunky dory.
Yeah.
You know, and like a lot of times that's where like by contrast, that's where I think my brain is usually like chewing on like the next problem already. And it's like, mm-hmm. am I even here right now?
Right. Yeah. You got to be present, you know?
You do. But those are the things that like being a parent, I think helps with a lot, because you think about the moments from your own childhood that like stood out, you know, and so like just this past weekend, for example, we were celebrating, you know, Easter, with the family.
Yeah.
And, you know, we went over to, mom and dad's house, and the kids have reached an age where they're able to do a tradition that dad had done for us a lot when we were kids.
Yeah.
Which was very interesting. It's like, I remember like when Easter, like, really became like a fun and very special day for our childhood family.
Right.
You know, and it was, dad would write these like rhyming riddle clues. And so like we would run downstairs, like with our Easter baskets or whatever. And, you know, you would go through and find all the various little, you know, treats and fun things yeah. in the plastic eggs. And then afterwards we would be sitting there like cracking them open and seeing like, you know, what we found and like what our little treats were or whatever. But inside of one of the eggs was a clue. And that clue would ignite like a scavenger hunt that would, you know, traverse all aspects of
You know, the neighbor's house or the backyard or the front yard or the basement or wherever, you know, you'd go everywhere.
And, you know, dad would be, you know, running along with us, you know, mom and dad with the video camera, and, you know, sort of, we would go and find an egg out in the garden or whatever after running, you know, 40 yards through the grass, and we're huffing and puffing and,
right.
you know, trying to get to the bottom of it so we can know where to go to the next one or whatever. And, you know, in the end, I think that those were very, 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 very special memories. And I think as a child, especially like on holidays where a lot of the world is shut down, is rare occasions as well where my tabs are able to close.
Right.
But yeah, so yesterday morning, you know, Luke is now of age where he can, you know, read.
Yes.
Which is, you know, he's the first grandchild, I think, to sort of crest that line.
Right.
In a, you know, proper capacity.
In like a meaningful way where he can like read out the entire clue and, you know,
yes,
not struggle with anything.
Right. And then the rest of the kids are also old enough to understand what, like, you know, to think critically enough to solve the, what are otherwise, you know, pretty solvable clues.
Right.
You know, but of course, you know, like Addison is 4, the twins are 6.
Yeah.
You know, so we're, you know, there's a little bit of that going on. But so they got to participate in this, like, you know, tradition of ours. And it was like, for one, it was just really cool to like hear dad's voice, you know, through the, you know, little rhyming couplets.
Yeah.
Again, like, I think that was like deeply, deeply nostalgic in a way that, you know, you could go back and watch a childhood cartoon or like, you know, like a song that you really liked when you were 10, you know, when it does that nostalgic itch, or, you know, play Pokemon again or something. Like, there's all those types of things. This is so specific and so like deep and meaningful that, like, you know, you can't relive it until you do.
Until you do. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's not like, you know, you could go to FYE and they're selling a, you know, pop vinyl that represents dad's rhyming Easter egg clues.
Yeah. No. Yeah. It has to be very specific to your own family. Yeah,
exactly. So, you know, yesterday it was really special, you know, to watch the kids go through that process, you know, run all through the house and everything. And they finally made it into my childhood bedroom, which is where the finish line was or whatever. But it's also like where Addison sleeps when she stays at mom and dad's house. And so like the final little clue was like, you know, the room where Addison sleeps or whatever. And Addison like yelled like, come on guys, I'll show you.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and she goes sprinting up the stairs and everything. And like, I walked in there and we're all just sort of like watching them like dig through their baskets. I mean, I could not have told you how hard this was going to like hit me in the feelings, but I mean, like, I got just like, I mean, I was so choked up over it. Like, I mean, I was like tears streaming down.
Yeah, like, I didn't expect that either. I looked over and you were just sort of like crying. So in case you guys are wondering, I did get it on video.
Oh yeah. Gosh. Okay, yeah. Great. Yeah. I like literally, I'd already had like 2 cups of coffee, you know, at my house that morning while we did Easter there, and then already had a cup with dad. And I was like, I have to go retreat somewhere to like, I could not stop. I was like, I mean, I had like the frog in my throat and I was like, I mean, if people look at me right now, I'm going to go into like racking sobs, like, you know,
right.
It was so much. But it was just, I mean, I loved it, you know, like it felt like emotions that I think sometimes throughout my life I would have not permitted to bubble to the surface, or right. I would have tried to bury it, mm-hmm. or something. And I was like, I think in that moment I was like, you know what, this is special. And like, I don't feel like it needs to not be special. Like that. I don't want to suggest to myself that there should be shame.
There should not be.
In that response. But for whatever reason, I think, you know, at different moments in my life, I may have felt that way.
Right.
So I don't know. It was just, I don't know how we got here, but it was just really cool and special. So, you know, shout out to, you know, Dad for being the best Easter bunny, and, you know, Mom and Dad for just putting together such a special part of our childhood.
Yeah. Bringing it back.
Exactly.
For our kids to enjoy.
Yes.
Yeah. It was really good. Cause it was like, usually we do Easter at your house and we had to switch to Mom and Dad's cause you have the renovations, and then it was raining outside. So we really couldn't do like, it'll just be like an outdoor party.
Yes, exactly.
And then even so the scavenger hunt had to like remain, you know, all inside, and you know, they still did a good job of spreading it throughout the house and stuff, and all the kids here. They found everything very quickly.
They did, yeah. They did a really great job.
But
yeah.
They had a super fun time of it. All right, Ben, next question.
Okay.
All right. What is one thing you wish you could stop doing?
Okay, let's think here. One thing I wish I could stop doing. And this is stupid and small, and I will try to revisit with a more meaningful thing. I am horrible. If you ever see me like almost like touching my beard, this is like a weird nervous twitch that I do.
Oh, like picking at your beard hair?
But like I'll pick at my beard hair, and the problem is that like I will like pull them out of my face.
Oh.
And so like if I'm going through like a particularly like stressful moment, it's like if you like look at me from like a specific angle, you'd be like, oh, I can see where he is like torn a hole in the patchwork of his beard.
That's funny.
And that's like one where, I mean, the number of times Alice has been like, Ben, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that. I mean, it's hundreds, you know. And it's like, I literally, like, I sat down and we were trying to configure the camera and stuff to get everything working, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm doing it right now, stop it. Like, you know, it's such a nervous like little thing. And it actually reminds me of a similar childhood thing that I would do, which is I would go to class, and while I was sitting in class, similarly like being nervous or else distracted or bored, I would reach in like up my shirt and I would find like all the stitching along like the interior lining of like the underarms of my shirts.
Interesting.
And I would like look for like knots. And then if I could find the knot, I would start to like pull the strings out. And I
so
would
you
like,
just like unravel your shirts?
I would like unravel my shirts. And then same thing, I would get so embarrassed at having done this. And I was like afraid I was going to like get in trouble with Mom and Dad. So I would go and like pull out Mom's sewing kit, and I would take like thread and thread a needle and literally attempt to like...
Would you really?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh my gosh, I had no idea.
Yes. And so I would like...
like you were pulling holes in your shirt, basically.
I would like, yeah, especially like around the seams, like, you know, like on the, like, you know, if you think of like where the sleeve of your t-shirt is, I would like pull all these holes in it. And then, I mean, it was so funny and honestly probably adorable to anybody like looking on, but like I would be trying to fix like a navy blue shirt and using like white thread, you know? And so it's like, And of course, Mom, you know, did laundry for us like when we were kids and stuff. So certainly she was like, what has happened here? Like, why? And it's, I mean, and then the other thing too was so crude.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Like, I mean, like,
you're not good at sewing.
You're not good at sewing. Yeah. The sewing machine that stitches together shirts on a commercial capacity is very good at it.
Right. Yeah.
My horrible, you know, inconsistent stitch work was pretty bad.
That's hilarious. I had no idea you used to do that.
Yes. I mean, so it was just, like, I think it's always just been like I would have benefited as a kid from like a fidget toy, you know, just like one of those like kind
of
a joystick around, or like the right. spinners or whatever. Any of those things I think would have been really good for me, because I'm also just like, you know, even if we're just sitting like around the island eating lunch at work, whatever, my like leg is tapping or restless leg syndrome or something.
I
have that. So yeah, all of those little things I think are usually because my mind is dwelling on one thing or another.
Right.
I would love it if it didn't do that.
Right. Yes.
I would love to fix that about myself.
That's funny.
In general, that's probably the ripple effect of saying, I wish I would worry less.
Mm-hmm. Right. Cause this is just like the physical manifestation of it.
It's the physical manifestation of it. And you know, I had a really great conversation with someone the other day, where it was like, you know, whenever I commit an action, it's like I'm trying to balance out the ethics of what I'm doing with the need for what I'm doing and my ability to solve the problem within the boundaries of whatever. And I think a huge amount of grace that I've tried to extend myself is that I know that at no point in time I'm ever attempting to cause harm to anyone.
Right.
And I think that that's like something that lives like, you know, and I know that about myself. Like that is something where it's like, I don't think that there's ever, you know, I mean, I can certainly get like frustrated with people or mm-hmm. whatever. But like, it doesn't mean that like I want to make things bad for them.
Right.
Or something. And so it's like, you know, sometimes there's that like, conversation of like intent versus impact. And it's like, do you have good intentions that can sometimes have like a negative impact? And, you know, I think that there is the need to recognize that good intentions can also sometimes align with negative impact, but sometimes the best you can do is have the best intentions and hope the rest of it falls in line.
Right.
And I think that that's something that, you know, like I've tried really hard to be like, okay, yeah, like your goal is not to hurt anybody. You know, what you're trying to do is involve as many people as you can and treat the world as positively as you can and hope that ripples out into more positive directions, you know? And so sometimes it's like trying to take a few steps back and extending yourself that piece.
Right.
Hey guys, Ben here. Wanted to let you know about a great way to support the show through our monthly Wizard and Candle Club. Each month, we work with our in-house illustrator, Isabel, to come up with amazing designs for this year's theme, which is OWLs. That means each candle is designed with a specific subject in mind. April's launch is Care of Magical Creatures, which features notes of flobberworm, scorched earth, and dragon dung. Oh, goodness, I'm so sorry. That's for a different project entirely. Sorry. This candle has scents of cinnamon, cedar, and oak moss. Much more pleasant. Plus, each candle features a hidden charm within the wax, and they're all available at carlinbrothersmercantile.com. Popcorn Culture is sponsored by BetterHelp. Okay, today let's talk financial stress, because it's one of those things everyone deals with, but nobody really talks about. Mostly because we're all too busy pretending we totally understand our budgets. And to be clear, therapy isn't about financial advice or guiding you on how to invest, but it can make a difference by working to understand your relationship with that monthly credit card statement or account balance. My own experience with this was interesting. I've always done well with fixed monthly expenses, car payments, and mortgage are predictable, but I'd hate opening my electric bill because it fluctuates. I'd feel anxious when the bill arrived and sometimes avoid looking at it altogether. But speaking about this in therapy helped me realize the not knowing was way worse than whatever it ultimately said. Plus, you can rest easy knowing that BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the US. When life feels overwhelming, therapy can help. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com. That's betterhelp.com.
Okay, let me tell you a story then from over the weekend where perhaps I faltered on this front.
Okay, lay it on me.
Yeah, I'm almost embarrassed perhaps to tell this, and then also maybe a little bit proud. I don't know. We'll find out.
Okay.
Yeah, are you ready? Yes. So over the weekend, last Friday, I suppose, is when this began.
Okay.
Whilst we were at work. There was, you know, one of those guys going around the neighborhood trying to, you know, pitch everyone in the neighborhood on solar panels on the roof.
Oh, yes.
You know these guys.
I absolutely do.
They come by. They tell you need solar panels and a new roof and a new lawn and whatever else.
Right. Yes. It's like, imagine a house,
Expensive it. Yeah. This is going to cost you a lot of money probably or whatever. So this guy, he has a different flair about him, though. He's like, I don't know, maybe 19 or 20. Like, pretty young guy, and he's cruising around the neighborhood on a hoverboard.
Okay.
Yeah, from like door to door.
Okay, like a hoverboard that like travels, like you stand facing forward.
Right, you stand facing forward. It's got like a wheel on either side of your feet.
Okay.
And you're like rolling forward.
And he's blitzing the neighborhood with this bad
boy. Blitzing the neighborhood on his hoverboard. On his hoverboard, nose and phone.
Okay.
Cruising around.
Yep.
In all completely white clothes. So this is sort of the vibe he's going. It's not like, not dressed up or anything.
Sure.
Not like anything like that. Just like, just cruising around. The neighborhood Facebook was also quite annoyed by him.
Okay. So this is not like a resident. This is not like
not a resident. No.
No. Okay.
Just sales guy who was like picked our neighborhood for the weekend, I guess.
Just soliciting.
Okay. Yeah. Going around. So he comes to our house on Friday in the middle of the day. And of course I'm not there, but he talks to Beth, and he's, you know, saying that he's like doing the solar panel thing, and then he's like, oh wait, is your husband home? And like she's like, well no, it's he works, like you don't, he does. And then it was like a like, okay, well I'll just come, just when will he be back? I'll just come back when he's home. And I know.
What?
I know.
That is highly offensive.
Exactly. It was so lame. Like, you're unqualified to make decisions about the house, lowly housewife.
I hate this.
I know. We were telling this to like all the other moms at, you know, lacrosse practice, on all of them were just like, say what, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Correct response.
Correct response. And so then later in the day, sure enough, he comes back after, I guess he can see my car on the driveway. And like, I hear the doorbell ring and, you know, Beth is telling me, oh, before you go answer that door, just let me tell you a quick story. And she relays all of this information to me. And I'm like, oh, is that right? And I was like, I was so mad immediately.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. But apparently in the time it took her to tell the story, he decided that no one was answering the door, because then I went to the door and I could see him just like scooting down the hill on his little hoverboard.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was like, all right, well, you know, whatever. Probably won't see that guy again at all. But sure enough, the following day, he returns.
No.
The fellow I know returns.
Just throw a stick in front of the hoverboard.
No, but he comes up. And I am prepared to go out and just like tell this guy, like I've already met one. I mean, not that I would ever not get solar panels, but I'm certainly not about to get them from this
chap. Know.
Yeah. If I'm going to get them, I'm going to investigate it myself. I'm probably never going to get it from someone who's just soliciting door to door.
Yes. I literally don't know right now, like, because I feel like I've seen the rise of solar panel door to door salesmen. And I don't know if it's just like a rare industry that still permits it. But and this is me tinfoil capping for just one hot second. I feel like there's a chance that the product that they're really selling isn't solar panels, it's financing for solar panels.
That is a little bit it. And the weird thing about solar panels, like when you, it's like you can't think about it, it's like, or you maybe you should think about it too much, is that like the perception is that you're putting solar panels on your house, and those solar panels on your house are directly feeding the power inside your house.
Correct. Yes, right.
That would be like my immediate assumption, but that is not how it works.
Well, unless you also install like a massive battery bank that,
right,
that can then, yeah, I understand. Cause you're otherwise taking that electricity, selling it back to the grid, which offsets
right
your energy usage.
Right. Right. You are essentially like you're putting the solar panels on your house and then harvesting solar energy for, yeah, like the grid.
Right.
Not your house.
Yes.
Right.
It's almost as if like, you know, I don't know, like if there's like a giant like windmill, you know, like on like a piece of someone's property or whatever that collects wind energy. Usually I think the government or someone leases that like, you know, 20-foot plot of land to put the thing there.
Right.
But for solar energy, the best locations to put them are on people's roofs.
Right.
You know, it's like that's the, you know, there's big flat things facing the sky.
There's big flat things facing the sky, but there's also just big flat fields they could just build them in.
Also
true. So like the thing is, like what they want you to do is pay you for them to rent your, like you should be charging them to rent your roof. You know?
Oh, sure.
Right?
Yes, right.
like,
That's a good point. I mean, it goes back to what I just said with the windmill. Like, right. The government would pay you for your little piece of land.
Exactly yeah, what it yeah, should be. Yeah, yeah. It's like they should pay you to rent your roof to put the solar panels on.
I like that plan.
You know, I know. Right? Yeah. Like, they are pitching it to you like, no, cut down on your energy bill. Do this. Pay us money to put them on your roof. And it's like, you can pay me to put them up there and then enjoy the energy you get from my house if you want.
It feels
a little backwards to me. Right. Anyway, that's a whole different soapbox. But guy shows up at my house on Saturday and I'm prepared to go out there and just tell him like, you know, we're not, you know, like based, you know, because of the interaction he already had.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
With right, Beth, yes. I'm just like, you know, there's no chance I'm even going to like, listen to your spiel. I'm just gonna like, we're not interested. That's what I'm prepared to go out there and tell. I'm just like,
sure.
Sorry, not interested. See you later.
Right.
You know,
enjoy. Also some critical feedback.
Also some critical feedback. Exactly. So he rings the doorbell and he's out there standing. And then I come to the door and he's got his note. He's on his phone. He's on his phone when I come to the door and I open the door and he stays on it for like another 5 seconds. And I'm like, dude, you rang my doorbell. I'm not waiting on you
to get off the phone.
Yeah. I'm like, what is going on here? And that was like the straw. And I was just like, I was already like, I think what happened is that in regular daily life, it's pretty rare for someone to be like disrespectful to like my wife, to her face while I'm present. You know?
Yeah.
Right? It's pretty uncommon. But now I know this has happened. And now not only do I know he has done it, but now he's doing it to me too.
Right.
Like, you're ringing my doorbell and then I have to wait on you to get off your phone? Like, bro, you are batting 1,000 in the wrong direction here.
Right.
So now I'm just like upset. And it's like, I think if people were disrespectful in this way, especially like to me is one thing. If you're doing it to Beth though, like, I think, like, I rarely get to see this in myself because people just don't do it. But, like, it activated, like, oh my God, I'm mad at you kind of thing.
Yes. Being upset on someone else's behalf is sometimes even greater than being upset on your own behalf.
Yes. Yes. So he, like, finally looks up and he's like, hey, man, okay. So I talked to your wife and I heard, you know, I was waiting for you to come home and I was like, yeah, I heard you were pretty disrespectful to my wife the other day. And he looks at me just like, like deer in the headlights. And he's like, no, I was waiting so you guys can make the decision. And I was like, you don't think that she can like make a decision on our behalf. And not only that, you're like staring at your phone when I come to the door. And he's like, well, yeah, I was doing that because I didn't want to be like looking at your house. I thought that would be rude. And I'm like, you're like defending this action right now.
Oh my God.
I know. I was just like, dude, I'm not interested. You can just leave. And he's like, fine, I'll go. And he just scooted away down on his little hoverboard.
Oh my God. The hoverboard is like something out of a TV show.
I know. That's what it felt like. It was just like, this is what like the TV show would add to this guy to make it like very clear that no one likes him.
Oh no.
And I was like, nope, this is a real guy. And then I at least made me happy that the neighborhood Facebook group, which I didn't read, it was reported to me that were also just sort of like ragging on this guy.
I see.
Yeah. So anyway, that was my I lashed out a smidge at this guy, and part of me was just like, I probably shouldn't have done that. I could have handled that more maturely. But the other part of me was just like, I don't know. I'm a little proud of myself as well.
Oh, I can see where you're coming from for sure. Cause I do think there's like, there's something to be said. I think, you know, going back to like the hard conversations type of thing. Obviously this is like, maybe like a little bit more, maybe like some temper, you know, involved and I would say justifiably so. I mean, it does sound like absolutely he was just being actively disrespectful to Beth. So, I think that there makes a lot of sense there, but also it's kind of like one of those things where, you know, there's niceties involved in the world. And I think, you know, we all, I would like to think, try our best to observe those niceties and kind of like creating a certain amount of like social respect for one another, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think sometimes there's also like a layer to where it's like, if no one ever tells someone that they've like erred or that like what they're doing could be like coming across in a challenging capacity, then it's almost like, I don't want to say depriving them the opportunity to change.
Well, I would never deprive this young lad that opportunity, you know?
Well, and that's what I mean. Like, it's like some, you know, I think sometimes feedback can be like helpful and digested. And it's the kind of thing where it's like in the moment, you don't always the lesson can feel like it stings. You know, like I suspect that person, you know, he rolled away on his hoverboard. I'd be willing to bet he got out of sight of your home and then probably was like feeling the full feel of the interaction.
Perhaps. That's the question is, did he walk away from that just feeling like, wow, that guy is a jerk, or like I should have a new approach, or that, both?
I mean, right. And that's where it's sort of like, you know, when being presented with negative feedback, it's like, do you take that feedback and double down? Or do you like look at it, you know, on like a base level and say like, okay, that was not the way to do that exchange. Or, I mean, alternatively too, I mean, who knows? It doesn't exactly sound like this particular salesperson had everything all like aligned. I have no idea whether or not there's a world like that they're instructed to like almost, because in sales or marketing or whatever, they say like, you know, it can take multiple touches for someone to ultimately make a purchase.
Right.
So like sometimes it's not the first time you've ever heard of it. It's the second time. And so like, if you're only getting one member of the household, it's like, well, I'll wait until we're both back, you know, and then that way I've already spoken to one of you. I'll wait until we can come back and speak to the other. It sounds like the delivery on this was horrific,
yeah,
for what it's worth. But basically, if he's instructed on the basis of let me get a second touch, that way I've already spoken to one of you and then I can come back and speak a second time. And then like, you're already slightly primed. You've already seen me before,
mm-hmm,
you know, like, do you see what I mean?
I see what you mean.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not defending any of the approach. But I think that that's the kind of thing where it's like, you got to fine tune the way that you're attempting to deliver whatever this message may be.
Yeah.
And whatever 2-hour training session was probably given to what I can only imagine is a heavily commission dependent activity that if a sale happens is medium grade lucrative.
Right. Sure. Could be.
Yeah. Cause I think I could see a world where it's like, you know, I we've gotten a quote from one of these people before. Same thing. We had a guy walk up, you know, and he was like solar panels, and we were doing our last renovation. And I was like, I mean, I love the idea of being like environmentally friendly, you
right
know, like that's,
yeah,
that's something I would prioritize.
Right.
You know, so we did the sit down or whatever. I want to say the quote for our house, which is not a very big house, was like $40,000.
That's outrageous.
Yeah, it is outrageous. It is outrageous. It's such a steep amount of money. And even if it fully offset my electricity bill, which the salesman, to his own credit, did not claim it would. He was like, we could probably cover like 60%. And I was like, you mean to tell me I'm going to be making payments on the solar panels while also
paying for the electricity,
having an electric bill? It's like that's a hard, and I think he knew that was a hard pitch, because then you're talking about like 30 plus years before this $40,000 has been recouped,
right,
in energy savings.
Right.
So, you know, but I suspect that in the event that you could make the sale at such an enormous markup, that there's plenty of meat on the bone to throw a solid at your salesman.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see what I mean? I'm trying to unpack the structure of the door-to-door solar salesman arena.
Yeah.
This is what I think happens.
That's what you think happens. Yeah.
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 But that also probably means that they're just mobilizing as many people as they possibly can to be like the little, you know, because they're probably not paying them anything just to be out there.
Right. They're just like, just go out there and just, we'll get as many touches, and eventually people will come around to the idea that, yeah, they'll feel guilty enough that they probably should be doing something for the environment and this for their house.
Right.
And all it takes is one or two people in the neighborhood to get it, because then you'll drive past those houses and you'll see their solar panels and be like, man, maybe I should do it. Other people are doing it.
Exactly that. Yes. So they probably even have a formula where it's like 1,000 people who answer their door one of them will buy it.
Right.
You know, and it's like, then it's from the, unfortunately for the salesman, it probably means they're doing tons and tons and tons of touches with absolutely no success. While on the flip side, the company selling it is sort of like, we just mobilized a whole bunch of people and we can hit 4,000 houses in a day, which means we sell 4 solar panel projects.
Right, right.
You know,
which means we basically sold like 4 apartments, you know, or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yes, yes. But no, I think that probably, especially someone who's like younger, there can be some value to learning this equation.
Mm-hmm.
I've probably told this story before myself, but I remember once upon a time in the aquarium world, I upset. We had a customer who was a doctor, and he was a, you know, super nice guy, and he would come in and, you know, he'd buy fish and corals and stuff from us. And he had a really amazing tank that had like a reputation in the area for being a good tank. He was really good at growing corals.
Mm-hmm.
And growing coral is, you know, hard. It's definitely like the, like advanced level aquarium keeping task.
Yeah.
But the cool thing about it, especially as the community develops, is that you can frag off pieces of the coral, which means literally going in there with like either a set of actual bone cutters, like surgical bone cutters, you know, to cut a piece of hard coral, or using there's a special kind of bandsaw that has, like a diamond blade that you can cut your corals with. You can actually take them out of the tank, put them under the blade and cut them. Or literally
that makes more sense. I was imagining reaching it into the tank.
That would not work.
That would not work. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. However, the first time I did this myself, I nearly threw up because I was like, I'm causing such harm to this coral, which it was fine. It, you know, they come back they're much more resilient. For as hard as they are to grow, they're much more resilient than you think they would be.
Right. Right.
But anyway, so this guy had a collection.
They're like weeds.
Yeah, sort of.
Right.
Like
you go out there with a weed whacker, chop all their heads off, make a giant mess of them. Like, there you go. As violent as possible. And they're like, whatever.
Right, right. But
we'll be back.
In the meantime, though,
tomorrow.
That cutting all those things are like cutting trading cards away, you know, so you can get individual polyps of a cool zoanthid, or, you know, there's stony corals like Millipora.
No, if only real trading cards work like this, you can just slice them into like 6 pieces and then just grow back, you know.
Oh my gosh, can you imagine?
Can you imagine?
It'd be like, I have a first edition Charizard card. You want a piece of it? It'll grow into a whole one yourself.
Right. Yeah. It might take a couple years, but you know,
you'll get there. Yeah.
You'll get there.
But so anyway, this guy came in and he was like, you know, you guys, like, you, I love the, you know, the mom and pop shop nature to what you guys are doing here. You know, I've got a collection of corals I just pruned from my tank. Here you go. So he probably gave us, I don't know, 15 corals that would be worth $300. And, you know, I put them in my new little frag tank or whatever. And then he like walks around the shop. He picks out a fish. He comes up to the counter and he had insisted not to take anything for his corals. And, you know, I was like, I'm going to take 15% off, you know, the fish just to, as like a thank you. It was not enough. You know, like, it was a problem and he was upset. And I heard about it, because it was almost like he just gave us all this, you know, goodwill that we could sell and effectively, you know, just collect $300 raw profit off of effectively.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You know, by way of selling them to other customers and stuff. And I gave him, you know, I remember it was a $44 fish. So I guess 10%, 4.4.
And like $6 off.
I gave him $6 off. So it's like, what I did was a gesture that was like, I should have just given him the fish and it would sort of be like, I'm not going to pay you, or like, you're not asking for money for the coral. I could give you this thing as like a thank you. Instead, he still had to pay an amount for it. And it was like,
but even though he insisted he didn't want anything for them,
he did. Yes. And it's like, I think again, it's like you go into like social niceties. It's like, maybe I could like, and I was also similarly 19 when this happened. And so it was just like, I think now I would have like a better sense of how it all worked. But I think even then, you know, it was like, to me, $44 is a lot of money. Like, I can't just like give away a fish that costs that amount of money. Like,
right.
You know, so like, it was almost like I didn't have enough, like, sense of ownership over even like what I thought was acceptable to do. You know, it was like, well, I can't, like, that would be like a lot of money to just like give away. And I didn't even know he was showing up today. Like, he just came in and gave me these things and I'm still trying to hit like, you know, my sales for the day. And he was the first, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, there was 100 different equations where I could explain myself, but no matter what, it was still like a life lesson that I feel like I learned, you know, about And I don't know exactly how to like dial it into like, here's what you do in this situation. It's just like, it made me more aware in situations that were similar where generosity is involved. That like,
so like you, what are you, do you think now, what would you do now if the same thing happened?
Oh, now if at my current age, my current like perspective on the world, if you walked in and gave me that, I would say, take the fish, go home. You know,
right. Okay. Like,
thank you so much. And I would, I know that the gesture would be sufficient. And my modest discount was otherwise insufficient, if that makes sense. The other thing would be like, not to discount it at all, I think was what his counter argument was. It was like, you tried to show me a thank you, but that thank you in the form of $6 off of my fish was like, by comparison to his generosity, was like marked as offensive.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Right. Like either just accept the gift or make a trade.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Either. Yeah. Yeah. Either be like, thank you so much, let's conduct business as usual.
Right.
Right.
You know, or like, for example, like, you know, just to use like a piece of media, in the film Christmas Vacation, there's like this big thing where Clark Griswold is trying to put in a swimming pool using his like end of year bonus.
Right.
And
that's the very loose thread that moves the movie forward.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah.
And so throughout the course of, you know, the holiday vacation or whatever, he's waiting and looking and waiting and looking for this bonus check to arrive in the mail. And it keeps not showing up. Finally, the post office worker on like Christmas Eve shows up and he's like, this got stuck between the seats. I'm really sorry about that. Merry Christmas. And he hands him, you know, the letter. So then there's this big moment where they like momentously crack open the letter and, you know, he's announcing like, I'm putting in a swimming pool with this. And instead it's a subscription to a Jelly of the Month Club.
Woo-hoo!
And it's like, he went from, you know, like if you're not going to do Christmas bonuses, like whatever, but like, don't substitute it with this like pitiful excuse for a thank you.
Right.
You know, like, and let us know, because people count on that.
Right.
Know, like for their income or whatever. So it's like that. It's not like somebody might be offended if they were just given a Jelly of the Month Club, but if you're given Jelly of the Month Club instead of your Christmas bonus,
which apparently could buy a pool.
Yes. Yeah. It's like, I have to assume that given the time frame, that would mean like a $10,000 right. plus bonus.
Right. It being replaced by like a $50.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yes. So long story long, I took the message from this doctor customer, and it gave me additional context in how to deal with people out in the world. And so I think your feedback to this person, what I'm trying to say is that like, while maybe harsh, I think that like there could be benefit from it, because you weren't coming from a place that was completely unreasonable. You know, you weren't coming from a place that was unreasonable at all. Like, this is where it's like, so maybe it's helpful for him to know like that this is not going to be a way to win customers.
Right. Right. Like, I suspect he can go and complain to his friends and they'll all agree with him, but he will not also forget.
Also true.
Right.
Yes. Yes. And it's like, that's where, you know, sometimes there's like split second, things that you may know to do. I'm trying to think of like a good example or something, but, you know, it's like if what would be a good example? Like if you're falling down, don't stick your arms out to catch yourself, because sometimes like by sticking your arms out, you're putting your like bones at risk.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the better thing sometimes to get the scrape than it is to like potentially break an arm.
Right. Sure.
You know, and you could be instructed by that, by like, you know, like when I was learning the snowboard, the instructor told me this, you know, and then you go to fall, and in that split second, it occurs to you just to ragdoll.
Right.
You know? And so it's the kind of thing that maybe like lives in the back of your brain. And the next time the occasion arises, it's sort of like, oh yeah, I remember that.
Right.
And now I know how to handle it better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So, you know, enjoy your free life lesson, hoverboard man.
Hoverboard man.
Yeah.
Also, maybe choose a different mode of transportation.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Just walk it, you know.
That's right. Yeah. Get them steps in.
Get them steps in, you know, or also maybe like a polo instead of like a t-shirt, you know.
Could be.
You got to look the part a little bit.
So you said he was wearing all white, like white pants?
White shorts.
Okay.
White shorts, white t-shirt, like, I don't know, like Vans, man. You know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this almost to me feels like somebody was like at the mall and walked past one of those like kiosks that was like, hey, kid, you want to earn some money?
It could have been. Who knows?
It's like, what do I need to do? You got a hoverboard?
Yeah. You got a hoverboard, dude? I mean, I see the kids in my neighborhood. Get an electronic scooter, you know? Like, even that. The kids in my neighborhood are flying around in those things.
Oh, yeah.
All the time.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Looking cool.
Looking cooler than hoverboard, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
That's not a mode of transport. I mean, there's like, I know people have them and I'm sure they're fun, but like as a mode of professional transportation around a subdivision.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. It's maybe not the look. I mean, it's funny too, because like I remember back in the day when we had like our boosted boards. And a one wheel, which were really fun, like little like electronic ways to like buzz around and stuff. But there is a big part of me that sees the value in the electronic scooter versus those things because of the like very, if you hit like a rock or a stick and the idea of flying forward and ragdolling yourself as you then slide across the asphalt like a bag of potatoes.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I picture happening. It's like, at this point in my life, I'm like, that risk is too great.
The absolute safety factor of an electric scooter versus skateboard is like 20 times.
Yes,
like,
yes.
It is so much harder for you to fall off of a scooter. And even if you do, it's probably easier to just can like run forward and catch yourself.
That's right. Yeah. But a 22 mile an hour skateboard, it's like hitting the ground at 22 miles an hour is gonna hurt.
It's gonna hurt. Yes. It was just, I loved those things so much. They were an absolute blast and so much fun. And I think about them even today. I'm like, I need another one just to cruise on the neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, just go for rides.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah, that versus scooter, scooters are definitely gonna be a million times safer.
Yeah, that's right. Hey guys, Ben here. Wanted to let you know about a great way to support the show through our monthly Wizard and Candle Club. Each month, we work with our in-house illustrator, Isabel, to come up with amazing designs for this year's theme, which is OWLs. That means each candle is designed with a specific subject in mind. April's launch is Care of Magical Creatures, which features notes of flowerworm, scorched earth, and dragon dung. Oh, goodness, I'm so sorry. That's for a different project entirely. Sorry. This candle has scents of cinnamon, cedar, and oak moss. Much more pleasant. Plus, each candle features a hidden charm within the wax, and they're all available at CarlinBrothersMercantile.com. Although this is like one of those, there's a brand of electronic bike that has been basically getting me talk about like how many marketing touches you need to eventually buy one. It's from a brand called like Super 73, I think, but it's kind of like an old school looking, like almost like banana seat bicycle that's kind of got like a little bit of like an off-road edge about it or something.
Oh, okay.
You know, it kind of looks like a small dirt bike a little bit. And I'm like, you know, I was talking about like the ATV with Addison last week, and I'm like, you know, there's just a big part of me that has this like draw that I can't quite stand attached to things like this.
Yeah.
But I've probably put the Super 73 in the cart like 15 times.
15 times.
I mean, that's an exaggeration, no doubt, but like more times than never.
Right.
And you know, it's like, it's an expensive piece of equipment, but like a lot of times I try to convince myself because I'm like, well, my current vehicle is a truck, you know, and we live close enough to our work that like I don't need to really drive a truck through the neighborhoods to get here.
Right.
You know, it's like it's overkill compared to what I originally bought the truck for, which was aquarium work. And you know, where I needed to be able to haul around like heavy buckets and water.
Yeah.
I needed space. I needed cargo. You know, and so I'm like, you know, if I had like an electric bike, I could just like zip right in.
You could just zip right in, man.
No problem whatsoever. But still, I still haven't done it. But maybe one of these days, now that I've said it out loud, I guarantee I'm gonna get like a marketing email.
Absolutely, you are. Absolutely, you are. I know there has been, since I've gotten my road bike, there has been like a, like, ooh, maybe I could bike to work someday. You know,
yeah.
I could do it. I'll just be like one of those guys who like maybe like once a week I could like bike to work. You know, think of the gas I would save.
I know, right?
And I get a workout in on top of it. And the only thing that makes me like, not the only thing, the thing that makes it hard to think about is that it is that our office is at significantly lower sea level than my house.
So it means
the ride here is going to be, one will still involve at least one really big hill.
Okay.
Okay. Like when I've been going on my bike rides, I have to go up this hill and it is almost immediate and it goes on forever. And forever when we were in cross country.
Yeah.
The joke was like, oh, Parkway South.
Yes.
Like, because you'd get on the Parkway and you'd start running south. And it, like, in my mind, Parkway South was the worst, was the less desirable direction to run in because it was uphill for what felt like forever.
I mean, miles.
Miles. Miles. But Ben, I'm here to tell you canonically that Parkway North would have been the much worse option.
So maybe Coach was actually...
Maybe he
like,
was giving us a break.
Right.
Parkway North is the... That hill genuinely... I'll tell you what, Parkway South, it goes on for maybe a mile. This is like two, like at least double and steeper.
No. Oh, actually, I do. I mean, I know where it is.
Yeah, I know you know where it is.
We used to go with like our skateboards and like, you know, luge down it.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's horrifying.
And then the problem was you would get to the bottom of this gigantic hill and then you were like 3 miles from home and you had a skateboard in your hand. And
right.
It's like, I'm not going back up that prepared, hill.
Yeah. Coming back, not so bad, but it is hard going up for sure. It's like riding through peanut butter.
Yeah.
So... I would have to go down that on the way home, but I would have to start out on the way to work. I'd have to go up there. And then on the way home, there would be much bigger hills besides that one.
Okay.
To go up getting home. And I'm like, in a weird way, I feel like if it was reversed, it would be better because like getting off work at the end of the day and then getting on your bike and have to do this crazy uphill ride all the way home.
The hard part.
Feels, doing the harder version of it at the end of the day seems so much worse.
Right, right.
Right?
Yes.
I must do it at some point. I know I must do it. Like I yearn for the ride, but in the meantime, it is like a real genuine roadblock of my like, man, that's going to be a really long ride home. That's what I know.
That's what I know.
That's what I know. That's what I can tell you for sure.
Well, and the other thing too is that like sometimes I think knowing the route and having done it a couple of times changes everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's like because a lot of times you start to realize like what feels like the, hey, I'm almost home of it all.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yes.
I think there's like a big piece of that. Like, so I said, like, we've been living out like at the mountain house with Alice's mom and it's like, you know, 40 minutes from town.
Yeah.
And it's been very interesting how like the very first time I ever went out there, I was like, Alice lives in the middle of nowhere.
Nowhere.
Like just nowhere.
Right.
You know, I was like, I can't believe, you know, you get to the road that she lives on and you drive 10 miles down it.
Right.
You know, it's like, what? You know, and it, like this takes forever.
Yeah.
And now that I've done it like 100 times or whatever, it's sort of like, oh yeah. You know what? And it's kind of scenic. And
you're just
like,
sort of used to it.
It's like, I'm passing the barn.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, okay. We're good from here.
Yeah. It is crazy how little landmarks like that. The other thing that's so about the road bike, I've basically been riding on two places, which is either the Parkway or the Greenway.
Yeah.
The Parkway, nothing but hills. The Greenway, nothing but not hills.
Nothing but not hills.
Nothing but not hills.
Yeah, yeah.
It is such a different experience because on the Greenway, on the one hand, there's no hills, which is great.
Yeah, we like that.
Yeah, that's great. That's so easy. I mean, there's like gentle hills, you know, it slopes here and there, but it's not like the Parkway. But that means that you are pretty much pedaling the entire time.
Sure.
To go. Whereas, so like when you do like, you know, if you do 10 miles on the Parkway, that probably means you were pedaling for 5 miles and coasting for 5 miles.
Right.
You know, because whatever you went out and did, you came back and did.
Right.
And there will be the same amount of elevation either way.
Uh-huh.
So, like, and to be fair, when you're going downhill, you can continue pedaling and make yourself go faster and get effort out of it. But you do not have to. You can just coast if you want.
Right.
You know, you can completely rest. So you could do 10 miles out and back, but really then what you've done is ride 5 miles, you know, in a sense. I mean, there's still the act of balancing yourself on the bike and all of that, whatever.
Right. Yeah, naturally.
There's all that. But then on the Parkway, you are in control of the speed the entire time. There's no coasting and there's no climbing. It is just go. right?
Yeah.
So it has been a different experience in both of those. I would say the Greenway is still significantly easier.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's like even back in our like mountain biking days, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Like there's like a fire road that is almost like the central vein that like everything kind of like peels off of in every direction. The fire road is kind of boring because it's just like the service road that
right.
like, you know, the Forest Service uses to go in. Cut down a tree that fell across the path or whatever.
Right.
You know, and it's like, if you go out there and ride, it's the same thing. You're pedaling always.
Yeah.
Good for endurance, bad for enjoyment.
Right.
But you know, it really is just sort of like, you probably gotta like dip a toe in both pools.
You absolutely do. I've also, this is the other thing that, or maybe it's not as different as I think, but like, what I've noticed from mountain biking is that climbing and mountain biking, although at least where we were doing it, like it's not to say that you didn't go uphill for a long time, but typically it felt like a lot of the uphills were like short, steep things that you could just sort of like stand up, power through, be done with it.
Yeah.
Right. And I would say the difference on road bikes is that like there is no reason for people to build roads in the way that you would build a trail, because trails are built with walking in mind, and roads are built with cars in mind.
Right.
And cars don't like random short uphills. They like long, gradual uphills.
Right.
So when you're on the road bike, like what I always felt like when I was on a mountain bike, like, oh yeah, climbing's like, it's like my mindset is always like, just hit it really hard and it'll be over faster. But you can't do that on a road bike, because if you hit it hard at the bottom, great news. Good news. You covered like 100 yards of feet. Good. And then you still got the rest of the hill to do. So enjoy that.
There
it's going to keep going.
What is the analogy for life here? You know, it's like some problems can be faced with short, aggressive bursts while others need slow, tenuous care.
Right. Yes. It's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. There. It is such different kinds of climbing.
Right.
Yeah. Between the bikes. Not that you might not have short climbs on a road bike or long gradual climbs on a mountain bike, but I would say so far the usual divide is those two things.
Okay, so here's an interesting, like, to I don't know if it's like philosophical or not, but like when like the joy of the ride, I think, is kind of like you said, like you yearn for the ride. It's like to me, sometimes when it comes to exercise, there's a massive delayed gratification mm-hmm. aspect to like what I'm doing, like where sometimes I think about, like, you know, it's February 8th and I'm doing like a workout, and it's like it's mostly for like the 7 days in the summer where I'm going to be out, you know, on the lake or at the beach or, you know, doing like whatever, where it's like where physique is going to be on display.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like that's the delayed gratification, like I'm doing the workout now so that then I can be happy. Like, and when I have, the irony is that like when I was like rock climbing was like the time that I most enjoyed the workout that I was doing.
Right.
You know, and then comically the end result was a much better physique because I was just having a blast doing the action.
Right.
You know, and so it was like, I never had to think like, oh, I gotta go work out today. It was like, I can't wait for work to be over so I can go climb.
Right.
What is your relationship right now? Because I know that you're like, you're in triathlon training. So you could theoretically say that like when you cross the finish line, that's the delayed gratification. Like you're building for like the big, like, haha.
Right.
I did it. I did it faster than last year. I did it better than last year.
Right.
You know, there's cheering people. There's loud music. The kids are proud of me. Everybody, you know, is here to support me. Or like, you know, how what's your headspace with that?
I mean, there is that. I am looking forward to the race itself. But I am also like really enjoying the actual, just like the act of training for it.
Yeah.
Like also, I mean, there's some, you know, fun in just having a new bike and stuff.
Right.
And like, you know, when I did the swimming last year, I just never really stopped, and I enjoy going for the swims. And I would say I've even gotten like breakthroughs on the runs. I feel like the way I've been doing the training, like we talked about like the zone 2 stuff before, like it has just unlocked a different way to exercise and interact with these sports I feel like I've been doing my whole life, but maybe I've been doing them like the wrong way my whole life.
I I do understand that completely. Like, you know, when we were in high school, there's a lot of times where, like, I think back to doing, you know, cross country and going for these like massively long runs and everything. And it was like, really, cross country wasn't like a deep love of running for me. It was the community and the people. I liked the other runners,
right?
You know, like, it was like these were like minded individuals who were into like endurance related activities and stuff, and it was just like, it just felt fun. I felt like I was in on something.
Yeah,
the running was almost the worst part of cross country, which is ironic because the whole point of cross country is running.
Well, I like a couple weeks ago I ran into one of our ex cross country teammates, Neil.
Yeah,
and just by happenstance we were at the same breakfast place and ended up just sort of like having coffee together that morning, and we were talking about this exact thing, and I was like, I feel like we were like training wrong. He was like, oh my gosh, me too. Like, we would like, because like we would do the base runs, but everyone, like, this is what he said, he's like, we do the base runs but everyone would just like run so hard there was like no zone two. And I was like, oh my gosh, yes. zone two.
Zone two.
Why didn't our coach know about zone two?
right yes.
Yeah. So I feel like maybe there's just been breakthroughs in like training, like, you know, the, like, people have scienced out better ways to train, or I don't know. Maybe you just didn't know, or maybe here's the positive spin I can give our old coach, is that maybe in his mind, these were like, he told us to go easy and then we would go out there and we'd run fast and he'd be like, man, this is easy for these guys. Wow. I'm so good at this. You know,
yeah, right.
Like,
right.
Man, if this is what zone two looks like for these guys, we're going to be killing everybody, you know? Okay. And it's like, nope. Should have been slowing us down.
Yeah.
Should have been slowing us down.
Well, and it's even interesting to like hear it described as like a strategy, because I feel like if I were to like go, you know, lace up my trainers or whatever and go out for a run and I looked at my stats afterwards and it was like, you never left zone two the whole time, I'd be like, well, I basically didn't even run.
That is the real, it's like the mental hurdle you have to face. Cause it's like, there's almost like, a feeling of embarrassment. It's like, I didn't even go. And it's like, no, but you did. You did still run 5 miles.
Right.
You know, like, you might be, you're telling yourself that like, I didn't run fast, or I didn't push it hard enough for it to count. But it's like, no, but you were outside running and you traveled 5 miles. Like, that's still true.
That's still true.
You still did that. And not only that, you built up a base that's going to help you run faster on race day. Like, yesterday I went out and did a brick. Yeah, as part of the training, which is when you do the bike and then the run to like help practice your body transitioning from one exercise to the next. And so I went for the race distance for both things. So it was like a 12-mile ride into a 3-mile run. And I was just like astounded at how good it felt. Like, I had to, like, I was laying in bed before I went and I was just like, oh my gosh, I know I need to go do this. And I super don't want to. We had like a big Easter breakfast this morning and I just want to lay here and I feel tired. But like, I need to do it. I took the last 2 days off. I have to do something.
Right.
You know, and I'm like mentally trying to psych myself up for it. And I got out there and like, I got off the bike and I remembered getting off the bike in the triathlon last year and just feeling like, oh my gosh, I can't even move. Like, how am I supposed to run 3 miles?
Right.
And I got off the bike and like, I'm not like in race mode. I didn't do the swim yet or anything. And I could sit there and, you know, take my time at my car transitioning and, you know, having a goo or whatever.
Sure.
But I was still running probably in like within the next 5 minutes or so.
Yeah.
And I started running and it was just like, it just felt easy. And I got going and as the run was going, I could just tell like I was getting faster and like it just felt so good. I felt like, oh my God, I could just run forever right now. I could just keep going.
Oh, that's, you know, great. Yeah.
Yeah. And I got to the point where I had to do like the turnaround and I was like, no problem. And I got back to the car. I had run like negative splits, and not only did I run negative splits, it was like my fastest 3 miles since I've been training. And I was like, and that was after the bike.
Wow.
You know, I was like, goodness me. Like, it was such a good feeling. So that's been really good. And I feel like, okay, I talked about, I think I mentioned this a couple weeks ago. I'm not sure if I did it on After the Final Pop or not, but I would say it's kind of been like a fun way to think about training in a way that isn't just like it. The point of it is like, yeah, I'll get to this finish line, or like, I want to, you know, look good this summer or something.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, So recently going to bed for, I feel like there is an unspoken agreement amongst every teenager on earth that it is not cool to go to bed early. Right.
Yes. I follow this completely.
And yes.
I remember going through the stages of this, like where I normally 10 o'clock in high school was like the cutoff. And I remember at some point in time, there was like a girl that I was, you know, interested in or something. And she was like, oh, I stay up till midnight every night. And I was just like, well, I guess that's what I'm doing now.
Guess now I have if I get offline, you might talk to other guys and I got to be here the whole time, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's like, how are you going to spend the rest of your night if I'm not there?
Right. Yeah, but if I'm here, then all those other guys go to bed early.
Right,
guess what?
Right,
too bad.
Yeah.
And like, so there, I feel like when you're, this is, and I'm just going to generalize here, but there's like this unspoken rule that like, because when you're a kid, your parents make you go to bed early. So the more you get older, you're like, I don't want to do that because that's what you said to do. I'm going to stay up late.
Right.
Right. And so you do it on purpose, almost as like the tiniest act of rebellion, staying up late.
Right.
And you can get away with it because you're a teenager and your sleep can recover like that. You know, you might be a little bit more tired, but whatever. You're more than willing to make that sacrifice. Then you get into college and you're like, no one's actually making me do it now. I can just choose to go to bed late.
Yeah.
And then you graduate college and now you have a job and stuff. And you're like, guess what? Now I'm an adult and I am going to actively choose that I stay up late and get everything done. Really stick it to, I don't know, my parents for making me go to bed early,
sure.
For shaming me about staying up late, for constantly telling me this. No, I can do both. And you probably can because you're 20 and you're still pretty good at getting up early.
Right. Yeah. Bounds of energy.
And at some point, though, you'll start to cross the threshold where it's like you're just sort of staying up late out of habit now.
Yeah.
Like you're just maybe used to it or whatever. And so ironically, what started out as like the rule, like you have to go to bed early, now the rule is you have to stay up late.
Oh, sure.
Like you've set a new rule for yourself. You stopped breaking the rule of going to bed early at some point and set a new rule for yourself, which is I have to stay up late.
Sure.
Right? This is what people miss, is that they have set the new rule. But let me tell you, you have set that rule. And the great news is you can reclaim the thrill of breaking the rules by going to bed early now.
There you go. I mean,
you can reclaim that thrill, right? And the good news is, like, you can break that rule and all that's going to happen is nonstop wins. You're going to sleep more. You're going to actually get 8 hours of sleep, which means you're going to feel rested. You're going to have energy in the morning. Your body is just going to digest more food and energize and burn calories more. Like, you are going to get all of the benefits of sleep, which are, like, just doing that offers you so many more health benefits than even eating better or exercising. Start with sleep, you know?
So at what point in time, Jay, are you going to whip out your finest crisp white tea, your finest white shorts, finally mm-hmm. commit to a hoverboard and door-to-door early bedtime?
Oh, man. I mean, I would say that we used to like almost intentionally try and stay up till like around 10
okay
or so. Now there are definitely days where it's like the kids are in bed, we're both really tired, it's maybe like 8-ish o'clock, we'll go downstairs and kind of like close down the house, you know, prep the coffee, pack the lunches, brush teeth, get ready for bed or whatever. And it'll just be like, let's just like watch TV in bed or whatever.
Sure.
And fall asleep pretty quickly, maybe around like 9-ish. There's days, of course, where we'll just go downstairs and have a regular night. But like it used to be like, okay, our show ended at 9:30. Well, we may as well watch another one because it's not even 10 yet.
Right.
Now it's like the show ends anywhere after 9 o'clock. It's like, that's probably pretty much it.
Yeah.
You know, like, we may as well just go to bed right now and the sleep. But the point of all of this is that it feels like a complete like hack on your life. You are breaking the rules and getting massive benefit, which is the complete opposite of when you're a kid and you're doing this. I mean, you're breaking the rules and staying up late. The benefit is that you get to hang out with your friends longer. But,
yes, right.
But like the trade-off is your overall health, which you can recover faster from. So it doesn't feel like much of a trade-off.
Yeah, I feel like you're on like a massive health kick at the moment.
Well, there's no doubt. But like, this is the point, is that like there is such a benefit to doing it that like it feels like you're breaking the rules because now you are, because you set that new rule. And so the same thing is with the exercise, though. It's like you're hacking, you know? It's like you have this like cheat code that you're just like, oh, well, I'm just gonna go do it. And other people aren't doing it for some reason. So I'll just rake in these benefits, and people can just sit there and be like, oh, I don't know what's wrong. And you're like, well, I don't, you know, I mean, just continue to not exercise, I guess. I don't know. It feels like you're like putting cheat codes on life, is what it feels like.
Yeah. I mean, and I think you've brought this up before sometimes, like with your kids, where it's like, you know, the kids live a fairly structured life. They drink tons of water every single day, make sure that they eat good foods. They go to bed on time. You know, it's like, you know, at the end of the day, they have boundless energy because every single thing about their life is being like dictated in a way that like prioritizes health and growth.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's like, if you trot yourself the way you make your kids behave, you'd be doing great.
Yeah. I mean, I think about that all the time, where it's like, you know, I put Addison to bed, I'm awake for another 2 hours, and then I wake up an hour before her. And
right.
It's sort of like, you know, that means I have 3 hours of life that I'm spending where she's asleep the entire time.
Right. She's just getting back. She is capitalizing on like three extra hours. I mean, it's like a game breaker. It's like, it's not just that, it's like a 6 hour gain for her. Right? She gets 3 or more hours of sleep, but it's more than that. It's 6, because for every hour of sleep, you're spending a whole extra hour awake.
Right.
You're going in different directions.
Yes.
Every hour of her sleep that you're awake is 2 hours of difference, not one.
Right. No, yes, yeah. You're absolutely correct. I mean, and like my only counter to any of this is that like, and I don't know, maybe it's the type of thing where I wouldn't need it as much if I was just getting more sleep. But I feel like a lot of times, like after Addison is down at the end of the night, it's almost like I have to like come down from the day's events.
Right.
Like if I were to like go and lay in bed, I would just be like anxious.
Yeah. Well, this isn't even about going to bed earlier. I mean, that was just my example for how it feels like exercise feels right now.
Okay.
Is that like, because we've gone to bed a little bit earlier, it suddenly feels like this, like, it's like, oh, it's like a hack or something. It's like, just go to bed earlier. But like, that's what it feels like in terms of like exercising in the moment versus like for a specific goal, I guess.
Oh, right.
Is what
yes.
I meant.
Yes. Yeah. Like the thrill of the ride. Basically.
The thrill of the ride. Yes. Yeah. The yearn for the ride.
Right. And that's the thing that I think like you always do have to cross that threshold too, where it's like, because anytime you just go like lace up and go for your first run, you know, in years, it's going to hurt.
Yeah. It's going to hurt.
It's going to be like, oh, this is rough. I feel miserable. But I do think if you can get to the point where you're starting to interact with it in a way where it's like, oh, this is like an interest, this is a hobby all of a sudden.
Right.
Then it's like, then you get the double win of not only is the way that you spend your time benefiting you as like an individual, but also you've got like a new hobby.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that hobby ends up just like being good for you. So yay.
So yay.
Yay.
There we go. Way to go, Jay.
Thanks, man.
Absolutely killing it. All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of The Pop. Hope you've enjoyed it. As per always, if you have any feedback for the show, you can send it over to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. Or if you'd like to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/popcornculture. But otherwise, until next time.
Pop, pop.
Today's episode was edited by Isabel Chrisley. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.